therapy. Okay, so we're talking about worldview.
We'll have good church
roots. Today's lesson will be an overview of what it is, why we bother talking about it, and then some of the most common worldviews we see, and then the last, hopefully, 10-15 minutes will be talking about our own worldviews, making sure we understand what we believe on these things, because to understand others, you have to first understand yourself, at least a little bit. So, first of all, here's the outline. What is a worldview? What are worldviews? What are the common worldviews that you're going to encounter today? And why study it? How do we use it? A few definitions to get us started off with are as follows. A worldview is simply the total of our beliefs about the world, the big picture, that directs our daily decisions and actions. That's from How Now Shall We Live, Chuck Colson. Good book. One of my professors who taught me this stuff, good one, a habituated way of seeing and doing. It's the core beliefs which determine how we live. It's how you view the world. It's really lots of this stuff that we're going to be talking about with worldviews. They're kind of, it's like, well, yeah, duh. Do we need to explain that? But we do, because so many people haven't thought through it. It's kind of making you think about things that you thought you didn't need to think about, is what a lot of worldview stuff is. The analogy often given for talking about what a worldview is a pair of glasses. It's this set of beliefs, values, through which you look at everything and you see the world. And everyone has a worldview. Everybody sees the world in a certain way. They believe certain things about how the world is, how the world works, how everyone lives, and nobody gets around it. So the question is, what is yours? The other thing to mention off the bat is worldview study is a soft science. It's sociology. It's not cut and dried and here's what a worldview is and these are the terms and these are the terms that the worldview thinkers right now use. They're not set in stone. The concepts are what we're driving at. These are just what I'm going to be giving you are ways that people have tried to organize it to help you understand better what we're talking about. You can get into trouble with some of this stuff of thinking that these words represent exactly what every worldview is, and a lot of it is in the gray. There's not hard and fast lines and terms to use. That'll make sense as we go on. I'll keep repeating that. But it's looking at the big picture kind of things and then trying to work out the details in between, but a lot of the details overlap. So it's a soft science.
Have you ever heard the term worldview used outside the context of the church?
I have.
I'm trying to think of an instance, and I don't know that I ever have.
It's most predominantly used in the circles we run in right. Church settings. Yeah. The people who talk about worldviews outside of church settings are your philosophers and really your people who are professional debaters, again, who argue with people in church settings. But yeah, your philosophy ethicists kind of people are the ones who talk about worldviews and how they work.
So is a worldview typically more like a Christian term or more about like a literal?
It's becoming so. It didn't originate as a strictly Christian term. It originated in philosophy. And I mean, anytime something originates in philosophy, you have to figure out how it applies theologically, because theology is a type of philosophy. So all that always crosses the borders. And so once the Christians get a hold of it, the rest of the world says, well, we can't keep using their terms because they're winning. So the game changes and you come up with new language. This is the language of the last, say, 60 years.
But I think the importance of using the term worldview, and I think the reason why we use it so much is because our belief system and belief as Christians is very much against the world. So when Jesus says, be in the world and not of it, we have to change our way of thinking because we're programmed to think have a worldly world, you know, the secular worldview. So we use it a lot because we're in the process of changing ours. the world itself doesn't necessarily spend time figuring out how they look at the world. They just see it the way they see it.
Yeah.
We try to see it the way that Jesus wants us to see it. So I think that's why we use that word so much and why we do have such an emphasis on it.
Yeah, we go about shaping our worldview intentionally, where worldviews quite largely are shaped unintentionally. We'll get to that in just a second. Actually, I think it's the next slide. It might be the one after that.
I'm always getting ahead, sorry.
Yeah. It's the way you see the world. That's what a worldview is. Everybody has one. Everybody sees the world some way. So how do we see the world? How do others see the world? And it's trying to explain that. And not everybody's going to fit in these perfect little boxes because everybody sees the world a little bit differently. The question for us as Christians is, how should a Christian see the world? What are the non-negotiables? And what are the negotiables? That's what we're getting at. This is what a worldview tells you about a person. If you're meeting somebody and you can... The point of studying worldviews, we're going to get to this a little bit later, but it tells you about other people, what they believe, how they think. If they tell you that they think man evolved from an amoeba, then that's going to tell you a certain thing about how they believe morality works. How should a person act is different for someone who believes that there was an unguided process that brought man to where they are versus somebody who says an intelligent being created us and gave us a moral standard to follow. So if you have these categories that somebody can throw out, oh yeah, well I'm a naturalist. I don't think that humans were created. I think that they naturally evolved. That gives you more information. So the point of all of these things is to learn terms to try and help you gauge other people a little bit better. It tells you what they believe, how they live on a daily basis. It also tells you what sort of pains they've had in their life. Many worldviews are created and developed through pain, and we're going to see that in a second. And for the more apologetically minded, it tells you where you should start in your apologetics. Somebody says, yes, I believe that there is a God. You don't have to start arguing about whether or not there is a God. You've already gotten to that point. You start arguing about who that God is. Is he? How is that God, as opposed to is there a God, etc. So worldviews, studying worldviews helps you understand people a little bit better that you interact with. And when you're sharing the gospel, understanding who you're talking to is key. Someone who doesn't believe that humans are sinful in need of a savior can't hear about a savior. So if you discern from their worldview that they don't believe humans are sinful, that's where you need to start, convincing them that no, actually everyone has sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Take them on the Roman road, etc. And like I said, worldview stuff, a lot of what I'm saying right now is stuff you probably say, well, yeah, duh, of course. That's a lot of what worldview is. It's just saying what we all know, but making sure that it's said. How are worldviews formed? How do they come about? How do they get into us? First of all, they're formed informally. This, what we're doing right now, is not the average way that a worldview is formed. People don't sit in classes and say, this is what your worldview is. You believe that men are basically good at heart. You develop that over time. The picture I gave you to help explain is through television, right? You learn a whole lot just by watching TV. Seeing how they portray the world affects how you view the world and how you would portray the world in your own mind.
I thought that was through the family.
Yeah, we're going to get to through the family also. But we did this a little bit last week when we watched the Woody Harrelson argument thing.
That was cool.
So yeah, social media, big worldview shaper in the current age. It tells people how to think. A meme comes by and it's got a point that it's making about how the world is. It has a worldview, and so it's shaping your worldview, either for the better or for the worse. Uncritically, worldviews are shaped without a lot of critical thought. You just take in everything that you have, and depending on how sophisticated your filtering process, you either try to assimilate everything that you take in as to part of your worldview, Or you try and reject everything. Rejecting things is what Christians do very often, and that's what we get known for. We get only known for what we reject and not for what we affirm, because we form our worldviews critically as opposed to uncritically. But most everyone forms their worldview uncritically. Just what the general opinion of the age is. Again, we're going to... Social media will pop up a lot because social media is one of the number one shapers of worldviews today. You've got a constant stream of ideas being fed to you, and how you deal with those ideas determines how you view the world. The important thing is to never stop questioning. That quote from Albert Einstein. Yeah.
So I think I should question that statement.
Yeah, exactly. Is that statement true? Is it not true? You heard the difference between a questioner and a doubter? A questioner wants the truth. A doubter wants to be told that there isn't any such thing. I want to have a group full of questioners here, not a group full of doubters.
Jonathan.
Always question what's being told, evaluate it, ask yourself, is it true? And if it is, believe it. And if it's not, reject it. Intergenerationally. So this is where the family thing comes in, Aaron.
That's an SAT word right there.
Intergenerationally. Often our worldviews are passed down to us by our parents and our grandparents. And we pass our worldviews down to our kids and our grandkids. I'll give you an example of my own that I realized that my grandparents are extremely racist. That was passed down to my mother in a lesser form, and passed down to me in a lesser form, but I realized it about myself. It's like, wow, I just had a racist thought that I didn't sit down one day and say, yeah, I'm going
to
be a racist.
I
it just happened.
like
so I did have to sit down one saying, yeah, I'm not going to be a racist. I had to change that aspect of my worldview. It's an ongoing process. It happens critically for the Christian. But can you all think of things that you believe mostly because your parents believed them? Things that the way the world works mostly because that's how your parents say that the world works, or your grandparents. And can you think of things where you thought, that's how my parents view them, I don't know if I view it the same way, or I know that I specifically don't view it the same way, I think they're wrong and I'm right. And do you have biblical reasons for that? Or are they just purely rebellious reasons of, I hate them. They must be wrong. They're idiots.
I hate my parents so much.
Well, it's in the whole world.
No,
there's
a million
kids.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one.
Yeah.
Are you asking for...
Go for it.
Okay. I was raised in a religious home, but it wasn't a Christian home. And so the idea of knowing that you can go to heaven is completely foreign and blasphemous according to how I was raised. And yet, that's not true.
Yeah.
So,
raising
good.
Your hands while worshiping my grandpa, because like my papa and grandma were Baptist, so like they don't do that. And so my mom kind of, like when my mom's around her dad, she's kind of hesitant to raise her hands while worship. It's just like, it's awkward for her.
Yeah. Old people.
Still
love them. It's easy to note the way that your worldview differs from your senior generations. It's harder to note the ways that your worldview is the same, because you might be blind to it. It might be, that's just how it's always been, and you've never even thought to question that. Again, question being that technical. Evaluate it. Is it true? If it is, keep it. If it's not, check it. I notice that a lot with words that I use. I'll realize that I've been using, words that I haven't thought about what they actually mean, and then one day somebody will call me out on it and be, wait, oh, that word means something totally different than what I thought it did. or I've been using it incorrectly. Or like, and that's where a lot of my pet peeves come from, is because the parts of my worldview that I've noticed that I don't like, and so I like the word worship. How we we make it synonymous with music. That really bugs me. And I did it for a long time, and now I try and specifically don't do that because I think it's wrong. But those kind of things, that you gradually become awakened to your own worldview. It's formed by community. Your peers affect your worldview. Heard you are what you eat.
I think there's a movie.
I guess I'm up on it.
It's really weird.
Thanks, John.
No problem. I'm just, you know, giving my input.
So yeah, you guys are all affecting each other's worldviews. And I'm affecting your worldview right now by telling you to think about worldviews. This might be the first time you've thought about these things. You might have thought about these things a long time ago, decided on them, and put them away, and now you're having to brush them off and say, okay, yes, I still agree, or no, I really disagree, and put them back. Point is, we're in community right now, and we're affecting each other's worldviews. They're being shaped. Either, again, for the better or for the worse.
And it's informal.
It's informally. Yeah, notice the deeper connections you have with people occur at the times when you're not sitting in a class listening to a talking head. They happen when you're going out to eat, having a conversation, or just sitting around and doing nothing together.
So let's all skip out on
school. Even though my mom thinks
let's
that you can't
it.
Play video game, I'm getting another first mix.
It doesn't necessarily mean that these things are not beneficial. It just means that they don't form our worldview as much as the others. They're formed over time. Again, like I said earlier, it's not like I woke up one day and said, yeah, I'm going to have racist tendencies. It developed, and then I had to undevelop it. This also falls a lot in line with the process of sanctification. As you notice sins in your life, and you have to work towards holiness by the power of the Holy Spirit, it doesn't happen overnight. It happens over long, long periods of time. Yeah.
So you can have like worldviews when you were younger, and then they like morph over time, and
yes.
Then they can be like something now, like in my age or something, and then I get older and they change again. Like,
yeah.
You just keep changing; they don't have to stay.
Yeah, your worldview often changes, and for the Christian, the idea is that you'll have the basic core of your worldview does not change; it's built on an unshakable foundation. But you can do some renovations on the top floors. Can develop your worldview more and more. And yeah, the average worldview does change quite often over time. But also, I'd say, again, this is soft science. This is just things that we've observed about the world. Generally, worldviews become more rigid over time. They're more malleable as you're younger and you're developing them, and then you get to a certain point and you start becoming set in that worldview. And you guys think of the crotchety old man who is always right and knows exactly what he believes, and you can't tell him differently, and it doesn't matter. He'll never question anything that he believes, even if he's wrong.
Yep.
My grandpa. Yes. And my uncle.
That's they're formed over time, and so the more time you have, the more well-formed they are. Again, for better or for worse. Last, by habit. This picture, see, it's like somebody was walking in the same place over and over and over again, and eventually this rep was formed.
Or someone just got a lead.
Yeah,
yeah.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. That's cheating.
So that you didn't have to walk through the tall grass every day. You've ever seen that, right? Where a path got formed just by walking on it over and over and over again. You'll see, like, around the campus at school.
Or driving.
Those irrigation machines that they push around in circles.
Yes. Yeah, and there's like a little divot where the wheel goes. It just, over time, you do it over and over and over again, a mark gets made.
Like when you sit in a couch for a really long time and then there's a dent there.
Right.
Yes.
And then you get up.
I'm very
like,
familiar with that one.
Butt prints.
Yeah, there's butt prints.
Or when you're...
Cheek divots.
Or when you're...
There's chivots.
You just got out of school and you sit down on the concrete. Yes. And it's like...
Yeah, so those are worldviews. They're things that, you know, you do something over and over and over again enough, and it becomes the way you see instead of the way you do.
So that could be called repetition.
Repetition, yeah.
Insanity.
Wait, doing the same thing over and over again and
expecting different results?
Yes.
I do that constantly.
Well, repetition without expectations is not the same.
So, point is, eventually, when you do something regularly enough, it starts becoming how you do something instead of a thing that you do. You guys recognize that distinction?
Yeah.
Yes.
You do something over and over again, it becomes how you do something instead of a thing that you do.
Yeah.
Right? It becomes part of your identity instead of being a thing that your identity acts upon. These are the ways that the worldviews are formed. Again, I'm going to point out, this is a soft science. There are other ways that you could probably come up with added things that you could say these are ways that worldviews are formed. These are just some of the most common ones, help communicate the idea the best. These are definitely not the only ways that you could say worldviews are formed. You could find other ways of saying it. Another thing like that is this, the seven components of a worldview. I think this is from... I think this is from Chuck Colson's How Now Shall We Live. I'm not sure about that, though. But he came up with seven basic views that sort of roughly define a given worldview. So your view of God, your view of truth, your view of reality, your view of knowledge, your view of ethics, your view of humanity, and your view of evil. If you answer those seven questions, you'll pretty well define how you see the world. The general rules that you operate by to answer all of the little questions in everyday life. The ones we're going to be particularly hitting on a lot are your view of truth and your view of ethics. When we get into all those, the biblical worldview of, those are all ethical questions. Lots of these, notice also, a lot of these deal with theology. Your view of God is an intensely theological question. What you believe about God, is he triune, or is he one person? Is he three persons, or one person?
Or is he even a thing?
Is he even a thing? Does he exist, or doesn't he? Is he a he, or is he an impersonal force?
Or a she.
Or a she. Are there many gods, hundreds and thousands of gods, like the Greek pantheon, or the polytheistic religions, or is there one God? All of those are theological questions. You're going to look to your religion to answer that, either atheism or Christianity or Islam or Buddhism or whatever your religion may be.
Yep. Man, you're so fickle, Denise.
Takes on no one, Josh.
Your view of humanity, anthropology. Remember that word that I taught you guys? The study of man. Right? How are humans? Are they basically good, basically evil? Did they come about naturally, or were they put on the earth for a purpose? Will they progress and evolve and eventually become extinct, or will they be eternal? Do they have a soul, or don't they? Is there an eternal quality to humans, or isn't there? All those are how you view humanity. Truth, a couple of years ago, when prepping for Riggins, we did a study of truth. And what is it? So.
Hey! I was there.
What is truth?
No.
Yeah.
Was it 2 years ago?
I remember.
I think
that
I
was
the
book
somewhere.
What did James do? What did James last year?
It was the guy sitting in
the James.
Folding chair.
After that.
Staring at something.
I know. But
no idea.
What?
That was the first one.
How do you know what you know?
Because it just is.
Yeah. Do you know what you know because somebody told you to know that?
Because of experience.
Usually.
Did you gain it through experience?
Oh yes. That's how I learned the best, is through experience.
Did you can you really know anything?
Ooh.
No.
Matrix. That's good.
That's good. That's good.
Okay, these are all worldview questions, philosophy questions. Worldview is very philosophical. It's how do we view the world? So, your view of evil, does it really exist? Is it an actual thing, or is it like a non-entity? Is it the absence of good, or is it its own existence? Is what we call evil actually objectively bad or wrong, or is it Is it just an evolved social construct that we generally decided that these things were evil because they hindered the progress of our own species? How do we define progress? These are all worldview questions.
You better stop.
So yeah, the ones we're going to be hitting on a lot are view of ethics and view of truth over these coming weeks.
Why not view of knowledge?
They'll all be in there.
We don't need
they're just...
I'm just kidding.
Those two are going to be the ones that get emphasized a lot more. But all of these will come up for sure.
We don't need no stinking knowledge.
This is a Blaise Pascal quote. It kind of sums up a truth about worldviews. People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. Blaise Pascal, 17th century French philosopher and mathematician.
What does invariably mean? Like, not usually, or...
Invariably with means without change. They almost always... People almost always arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive.
Can I not agree with that?
Yeah. And what would be your counter argument? What would be your counter view?
Just basically because I base most of my stuff off of proof. I mean, yeah, proof or faith.
And why?
And faith isn't really attraction, so.
Good.
Someone has a poor worldview, then why would they find that attractive? How does that explain poor worldviews?
Well, and how are you defining poor worldview? One that doesn't line up with reality very well?
Yeah.
Well.
See, that's not true for me either. I typically base my things on proof as well, but I believe on proof.
We'll just go very simple. They hurt themselves.
I think
as
Christians, we're supposed to do it on proof.
Self-destructive.
You know, truth.
Good. Yeah.
You're not really going to get anywhere if you base anything off of attractive.
This statement is not as true of Christians as it is true of other people groups. It's also not as true of, well, no, Christians is the one that I would put up there. Because, again, from my worldview, I'd argue that Christians have all of the proof. They have the truth, and so anything that, any worldview that contradicts with the Christian worldview will have less proof, and so they will have gotten there by other means. I think the other means is likely what they find attractive. I would redefine that as sin. Most people arrive at their worldview based on what they want to do at the moment and how they would like the world to be regardless of how the world is. And most people would like the world to be one that they control. Most people would like to be in control of their surroundings and essentially be God, which is another way of describing the original sin. Eve saw that the apple was pleasurable and that she would be, and the serpent said, "Surely you will not." She knows that you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And she saw that it was desirable and took and ate. People want to be in control of their own worlds, and they want to define their reality. And that's attractive. That power is attractive. I think pleasures are also what Blaise probably has in mind when he's talking about this. The things of this world. Sex, money, and power. The three driving forces of the natural man. But, by all means, disagree with it. Just construct a biblical response of why it would be wrong.
Because Steve is an heir, so if he said that's right, then it's wrong.
It's true.
You're writing about it.
I think Stephen likes that joke in it. The least.
Here's some of the most common worldviews that you're going to see. So these, again, are soft sciences. These are things that people put names on to try and fit people into boxes to help us understand them better. And some of them are very good clear boxes. Some of them are less clear hazy boxes. There's some overlap between. You very much can be a naturalist and a postmodern. They clash in some points, but a lot of them are similar. Generally, you can't be an atheist and a polytheist. You're either don't believe in God or you believe in many gods. Those two aren't going to have as much overlap, etc.
Now, what if you, like, believe that, like, I don't know how to phrase it, but, like, there may be gods, but there may not be, like...
Agnostic? That'd be agnostic. We'll mention that. So, yep.
Oh, sorry. Is there one that's, like... Someone told me at work the other day that they believe, like, God created everything and then, like, that was it.
Stepped away. Like, that's deism.
So, supernatural.
That's deism. Right? So you believe that a God existed and his only function in the world was creation. Mm-hmm. And now he has abandoned the world and left it to its own devices. Yeah.
So.
Watchmaker theory is a common phrase that gets associated with it. Lots of the founding fathers were deists. Not as many as people would like you to believe were deists. There were quite a few Christians, but... You often hear, oh yeah, they were all deists. I'm not sure. There were lots of Christians. But that's a different subject for a different time.
For the government this week.
I'm going to go over these three because they hit on a lot of different levels that you're going to see a lot of in common American culture where you are today. There are other worldviews in this. Again, some of them are listed. I'm going the wrong way. Some of them are listed there. But... these are going to be the ones that you'll see the most. So the naturalistic worldview. This is the one that says everything that we see in the world came about naturally, as in without God. They're usually atheists or agnostics. Some of them are secular existentialists. We'll get to that. Atheism, the belief that there is no God. Okay. What you believe about that is going to affect a lot of your other views. Okay. So this is why most naturalists are atheists. Agnostics, there's two different kinds of agnosticism. There's hard agnosticism, which says we cannot know that there is or isn't a God. And there's soft agnosticism, which says I don't know if there is or isn't a God. But I'm open to be shown that there is. Do you see the difference? Hard agnostic says there's no way you can ever know if there is or isn't a God. Period and full stop. Hard agnostics are actually atheists. They just don't want to admit it. Soft agnostics are the ones who are just caught in the questions. I don't know. Show me that there is or isn't a God. Prove it to me. Secular existentialism. God does not exist, so humanity must learn to live without him. This is a natural byproduct of most atheism. And a pretty common part of the naturalistic worldview. Their view of man. Naturalists are almost always evolutionary. They believe that man came about by macroevolution. Millions and billions of accidental chances, completely unguided, mutations that caught on and slowly added up to Homo sapiens, man. Men are entirely biological machines. We're programmed by history, by our nature, by our circumstances. They're sacks of meat. That's one particularly crude way that a naturalist has put it. We're just sacks of meat with electrons firing that tell us how to think. And so you don't have any kind of will or volition. It's all programmed in you. Every choice that you make, every thought that you have is determined by the matter that exists in your brain. Different electrical pathways would yield this particular thought at this particular time, and you can't do anything about it. That's the naturalistic worldview. Yeah.
So what do they think about the conscience? Like
they'll say that it's the same thing, that the conscience is your brain. It's something that your brain has evolved and developed as a means of progressing or preserving the species. Man is finite, will one day become extinct. As in, there was a time when man didn't exist, and there's going to be a time when he doesn't again. There's no afterlife, and of course there's no such thing as sin, because there's no such thing as right or wrong. We'll get to ethics in a second. View of truth. Most naturalists are modernists also. Modernism is the idea that science is how we find truth, simply put. Everything is determined by your five senses. If you can taste it, touch it, see it, smell it, it's real. That's how you gain knowledge. That's the only way that you can find truth, is by the observable universe. Ethics. There is no objective, prescriptive value. There is no such thing as right and wrong for everyone. There's only right and wrong for you. They're individual preferences, not or products of society. Those are the two options for naturalists. Everything that humans tend to agree on as being wrong, like, say, murder or rape, that's not necessarily true. It's just what we've all decided is wrong for the progress of our society, to make it better. But again, there is really no better. There's just what we want it to be. It's all a preference. We might just as easily have said that murder is good, but it would lead to the extinction of our species. So because it would lead to that, we don't call it good, we call it bad. But that's purely our definition. It has nothing to do with an objective reality that exists outside of us. Conscience is a product of evolution. That's the naturalistic worldview. Everything has to be explained by science. You have to be able to observe it, test it, repeat it. That's what tells you what's true. And anything outside of that, no truth there. Our world can be explained purely in biological terms. Chemical reactions. That's what drives our world. Yep.
Just because these views are considered naturalistic doesn't mean that they're all completely wrong?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, so can you pick out a few things in there that Christians would agree with and a few things in there that Christians wouldn't agree with?
Man is finite,
no objective.
Extinct.
So Christians would... would agree with that?
Well, like, man is in human... like
flesh.
In the sense that everyone dies?
Yeah.
But mankind as a species...
Right. But eventually this world, everybody, all the people in flesh will be... you know,
made new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll no longer be humans.
Yeah, we'll be perfect humans. We'll be better humans. We'll be humans without sin. So there's a little grain of truth with that. Truth can be found through the five senses, but not only through the five senses.
Well, it's the same thing about morals are products of society. I mean,
yes,
there are moral absolutes, but there's, for instance, I've had this discussion with a lot of people about what is considered bad language or foul language.
Mm-hmm.
That's very most definitely a product of what society accepts.
Yeah.
Or what they think is wrong.
It changes from society to society.
We talked about that last week.
Sure.
What are the things that Christians would clearly disagree with?
There is no such thing as sin.
There is no such thing as sin.
There's no afterlife. There is no God.
Chance, product of evolution.
No,
pretty much everything in there.
Conscience is chance, is a product of evolution. Entirely material, biological machine, and sex. No, that's not
prescriptive values, things that tell you how to behave.
So, I have a question.
Yeah.
So when it says entirely material, biological machine, or meat sacks or whatever, depending on which form of religion you take, that's not entirely, like, I don't know. It depends on what you believe.
Yeah. All
it's still in a, like, more, what's the word? Not necessarily predestination, but kind of along the lines of that. Where you put biological machine, or
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah. There's components of being. There's a view that called determinism.
Yeah.
That's what that view is. It's determinism, that you're predetermined to act and behave in certain ways, conditioned to behave in certain ways. And I'd say, yeah, there's probably a grain of truth to that. Some people behave certain ways because of their upbringing. They behave more one way than another because of how their worldviews were formed. But Christians would say not entirely so. There is a supernatural peace component to it. Somebody had a hand up over here. The postmodern view. So there's going to be some overlap between the postmodern and the naturalistic worldview. But the view of God is usually New Age spiritualism. God is all of us, or God is energy. Or non-theism. I believe there's a God, but I don't really at the same time. What you'll notice with postmodernism... What you'll notice with postmodernism is I just have a personal detest of postmodernism because it's so self-contradictory in a lot of ways. Postmodernism is... we'll get through that. Yeah, God is all of us. The view of man, humans are pawns in a cultural reality. It's all about the meta-narrative. So you guys have heard that's so meta. That's,
yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, what's
well, they don't even know what it means. That's the point. The meta-narrative is the grand story of existence. That we're all part of this story that's moving somewhere, and we get to take part in it. And our narrative, our story, contributes to that grand story. And so we're progressing towards something.
The Night of Nights. This is like
meta means over or big.
Why do they call it postmodern?
Makes sense now. Now I don't have.
It's called postmodern because it came after the modernist view. So the modernist view was truth can be found through science, and progress in society can be gained through technological advancement. The group that came along after them in history said they were wrong. Truth is found within, and progress in society can't be gained through scientific revolution technology. It's found in personal revolution and the meta-narrative.
The meta-narrative.
That's a quote that I talking with a postmodern actually specifically told me, so that's why I throw it out.
How?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
I don't believe in absolute truth.
I'm a liar.
Postmodernism deals a lot with culture. It's all about culture, and one culture is not better or worse than another. They're just different. A culture that's in the Amazon that views it as okay to ritually sacrifice one of its members every blue moon is okay for doing so. It's not wrong for doing so. That's their culture. Who are we to pass judgment on them? One culture isn't better than another. A very postmodern idea. Particularly the thing that really defines postmodern is their view of truth. Truth is what you want it to be. Truth is an illusion and subject to change. There are no universal truths. There are absolutely no universal truths. Which most postmoderns have learned not to say that because they've learned that that's an absolute statement and that is an absolute truth. So they're self-contradicting when they do say that. So they'll find more creative ways of saying it. Like, truth is dependent... all truths are dependent upon the individual. It's another way of saying that there is no truth.
Except if you think about it, it means the same thing.
Yes. Truth is what you personally hold as meaningful. Not as... There is no objective reality that we all can appeal to. Many postmoderns are atheists also, or they're New Age spiritualists. God is all of us. Yes. Many millennials are postmoderns. That's part of why the older generations don't like them so much. Part of why I don't like millennials so much.
What do you do?
Sorry?
Do you not be a millennial, or you just have no choice?
Well, no, I mean, I am a millennial. I just don't fit into the postmodern millennial mold.
Oh, so based on age, not your beliefs or something?
Yeah. It's just that generally you see trends. Most people of a certain age tend to agree with these kind of ideas. So most millennials tend to agree with postmodern ideas, and I don't. They're very anti-authoritarian. You can't tell me what to do. It comes back to this.
Anarchy.
God is all of us. I am my own God. I determine what's right and wrong. Morality is up to the individual or to the culture. It's not up to you to tell me what is right or what is wrong.
Well, but I... But
yeah, Dad.
I wanted you to say that.
And we should all be tolerant. Tolerance is a prized virtue for the postmodern. This one is kind of going out. This is a... They're starting to realize, again, the ludicrousness of...
Their
view of tolerance, because they realize that they do argue for intolerance of certain things. So this one is one that's going out of style, particularly among the philosophers who are postmodern. But threw it up there because you'll still find some who haven't thought about it, still use that language. So. We're going to book along through here a little bit. The biblical worldview, in general. Your view of God and man and truth, and really ethics too, are going to be sourced in the Bible. Yeah, you guys don't have this one on your papers.
Yeah.
Because what we're going to do is we're gonna be doing this together over the next 14 weeks. So your theology is another very similar way of saying your worldview. The way you view God and how he relates to humans and how we should live in response to it is essentially a worldview. So this is why knowing your Bible, having your Bible shape your theology, also really helps in shaping your worldview. Why we bother talking about it in here. But generally the view of God are the doctrines that the church holds is universally true. That God is triune, three persons, one essence, that he is above humans, he created them, and your view of man is that man is made in God's image. He's a personal being, he is a he, not an it. God created everything, reality as we know it, and he's active in his creation today. Whereas the deist would say they would agree with most of this, but not that. Their view of man. Man is made in the image of God. Man is created by God but is fallen, sinful. Evil is something that has entered in this world as a result of free will. God did not create it. That's one that people debate about. Man is saved by grace through faith. That one's that you can't debate about that one and call yourself a Christian. Man has a spiritual, eternal component and a fleshly, temporal one. Kind of what you were saying, Josh. So that there's that element of humans will all die. But there is an eternal soul within men. Truth. Truth is based in reality, knowable, found in the Bible and in Jesus, the Son of God. Truth is universal and absolute. There are truths that we just don't get to argue about because God set them forward and not us. That's the biblical worldview.
Even though for some reason people argue about them.
We're going to talk a lot about these next week. So.
The same as questioning? Like, what if you feel like your beliefs might be different because of the way you were brought up about a certain worldview, and so you're like, okay, and then you question it to the point where someone explains to you how this works, and this is the Bible, this is what you should believe as a Christian, and then you're like, okay, well,
and then you say, then you recognize the Bible does believe that, and then you say, okay, then I do agree with that?
Yeah, is that the same as arguing? I mean, if you kind of...
Yeah. I would say argument should lead to that. Sometimes when I say people argue about it, what I'm really saying is it's not an essential doctrine, and so we can disagree and still be biblical. We don't know for sure what that one is. The answer to that is. I guess I need to be more precise in the way I use that phrase, too. Thank you. We're going to be talking a lot about these in the coming weeks, so we're going to speed through them. But the natural moral law is written on the hearts of humans. Men are stewards of God's moral judgments. We are responsible for making known morality to each other and hold each other accountable for the morality that God has revealed to us. These are all biblical things that the Christian should affirm. So why study it? How do we use it? What are, now that you've gotten just a kind of a, this is a bird's eye view of what lots of worldviews look like, some of the common worldviews today. Why do we bother studying these things? Well, it answers a lot of questions about just your big philosophical why questions of existence. How should I live? What should I believe about this particular issue? We're going to be doing a lot of that in the coming weeks. What should I believe about abortion or about homosexuality how should I respond to this event, this tragedy that occurred? Your worldview will determine how you respond, or rather, how you respond tells you what your worldview is. They're kind of mutually informative. It answers philosophical questions. What is truth and reality? How do different people answer the big questions of life? Why are we here? What is this all about? It answers practical questions. What will I do next because of my worldview? Once you have gone past the informal creation of your worldview and gone to the formal creation of your worldview, you can say, I am a Christian. Christians believe this, so I should and will behave this way. That's different than how the majority of people operate. Exactly. It also tells you how other people are going to act and react. How will so-and-so act because of his worldview? When I see Chris at work tomorrow after a big shooting happened, I know he's going to say this because his worldview is da-da-da-da. How can I prepare for that conversation? How can I preach the gospel to him better? These questions are answered by knowing worldviews.
But it shouldn't be a thing that we kind of just release on people, you know, like just... So if we're arguing, we shouldn't have it a back and forth. We should just be like a couple of exchanges, and then we'd be like, okay, well, maybe we can pick this up another day.
Should be done with humility and respect, something that I work on.
Because I've had conversations with my coworkers about stuff like this, and it's gotten heated, and I'm like, all right. So I just kind of like say, okay, well, you can have your beliefs, but I'll have my beliefs. But I mean, this is why I think.
And I've been in those situations myself.
You're entitled to your own wrong opinions.
Yeah. Learning how to be firm in what is true, yet loving. It's a lifelong pursuit of mine. I'm not the best person to ask. That's the mode I go. So now, real quick, we're going to determine our worldviews, try and... These are questions you can ask about other people to determine their worldviews. Where do you think we came from? What are we humans? What do you think happens when we die? What has gone wrong with this world? Can you believe the evil stuff that's happening in the world? What do you think we should do to fix this world? These are easy one-liners you can start worldview conversations with. Because everybody has some answer to those questions. Even if the answer is, well, I haven't really given it much thought about it. You probably should, and they're probably lying about that. These are the questions to ask about yourself, though. So on the back, you have a blank worldview chart with the 7 worldview components. Just take a few minutes and try and fill in your basic views of that. Put down some basic ideas. Okay, God. Try and define him.
Can you put the biblical one back up?
Can I get a pen?
Yeah. Is this like multiple like bullet points or just like one like bullet phrase?
Do whatever you want. Bullet points are good. Couple sentences are good. Just try and... Basically, what you're doing right now is you're writing out your own theology in a very brief...
Wait, we're answering all these questions in a line?
Oh, I suppose.
Well, yeah, you're answering those questions and then filling in the chart. You don't have to answer these questions specifically, but...
What if I don't have time to think about all of these things?
We'll take them home and fill them in later.
I literally can't spell in
terms.
So yeah, take 5 minutes and try and do your best. If you don't know, that's fine. Leave it blank or write I don't know. But just do your best.
No. Stevens, they're the ones that have...
Evil is not a very...
just have to...
It's not a good topic. It doesn't explain enough of what you want us to put in
the words. Yeah, put the words view of in front of both knowledge and evil.
Basically, just say evil is bad.
Okay. So it's where does evil come from? What is evil? Is it a self-existent thing? Is it the corruption of something good? Did God create it? Did the devil create it? Does it really exist, or is it just a social description that we all?
So how do you know if, I'm trying to think of like what to put for reality, and I'm trying to see if reality is a man-made concept, or is it a biblical concept? I don't know which one.
Good. Think it through. Yeah, if you're struggling a little bit, that's okay. If you've never thought about this before, it's... Or in these terms. We'll go ahead and move on. So, you take that home. Next week, come back with it as fleshed out as you can. Remember a couple things. This is just some guy who came up with these seven things to define a worldview. There are other ways to do it. So, if you just can't think in these terms, find some better terms to think about the same concepts and use those. It's worldview study is not as hard and fast as physics or something like that. It's a soft science, so. Don't worry if you're struggling or confused. And I would also encourage you to take some time and look through the Bible on some of these things. Because if you hold to a biblical worldview, genuinely you want to consult the biblical to find it. That was a joke. But. Obviously, not a very good one.
What did you say?
So, if you hold to a biblical worldview, generally you want to consult the biblical.
Oh, yeah, he's. Right. It's probably a good place to start.
Yeah. Or you can consult Stephen.
Next week, we're going to go through the view of morality and truth. Because those are two things that a lot of these other ones will follow if you get those straight from a biblical perspective. And a lot of the rest of the lessons and these ethical questions we're going to be answering, if you have the morality and truth thing down, the ethical answers will follow pretty quickly. If I'm going to put that list of topics back up for the 14 weeks, etc., if you would like to consider teaching one of them, come and talk to me, and we'll work it out. The ones that I'm going to insist that I teach are the sex and homosexuality, because we just need to clear that with parents and stuff. So, and I already have that lesson prepared. So we got to do a little bit of prep work on that. And but the other ones are.
Are those the 7 weeks?
Yeah, and no, this is not the. I'm going to come up with an actual specific calendar of when we're going to be talking about these different topics. So, if you want to teach one, but you want a little bit more time to prep it, let me know.